You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
Welcome again to MC3, and as I said earlier, we're starting a new series today called Rush for Christmas, and that's what we're going to be talking about. And I want you to know that this series, and I guess let me just let you in on insider pastor stuff, okay? Christmas is kind of hard for pastors, there you go, because, yeah, you know, how are we going to make it new and exciting? You know, how are we going to make Jesus more exciting this year? And his birth and all that, which is kind of a bad thing theologically altogether. I mean, Jesus came to the earth, God became flesh. That's pretty incredibly awesome. So I don't want you to feel like we're trying to cheat or to make it something that it's not. But at the same time, you know, I want to look at what is Christmas all about, and how do you tell the same story over and over without people being like, been there, done that, you know, we know the story. But all that to say that this series is something that's a little bit different from your typical Christmas series. We're going to talk about Jesus. We're going to talk about Christmas, but not in the, you know, stable manger kind of thing. Well, we will a little bit. That's part of it. But it's a little bit different. And I want you to know that as we start, that this series was something that I planned this time last year, because I was watching what was going on within MC3, within the people here, within the families of MC3, and seeing how busy, how crazy, and how rushed we are at Christmas time. And I remember thinking, you know, this is this time where we're supposed to celebrate the birth of Jesus. We're supposed to have fun. We're supposed to enjoy it. And most everybody I saw had steam coming out of their ears, and they lost all their hair, mostly. But it was because it's crazy, you know, it's just kind of crazy, crazy, crazy. And I thought, you know what, this is wrong. Why are we getting so caught up in something? And I don't mean we shouldn't get caught up in Jesus and we shouldn't get caught up in Christmas. But in terms of all the other stuff, all the other packages, the whole rush that comes with it. And I want to take these next few weeks, only 3 weeks because we're taking the fourth Sunday off. But these 3 weeks to talk about Christmas. And to talk about slowing down when it comes to this whole idea of rush and the insanity. So as you can tell, I'm walking on a treadmill. And I think I've actually, just for what it's worth, I've been preparing for this for the last couple of weeks. I'm like, okay, I can't get out of breath. So I've been running at home on my treadmill and trying to make it through. And I think I can do it. We're going at a whopping 1.5 miles per hour. And that's actually for the sake of my microphone, too, so it's not all bouncing and everything. But anyway, I'm on a treadmill, and this treadmill represents what Christmas is for many people. It represents what this time of year is. You know, you get on a treadmill, and if you've never seen one of these fancy contraptions before, it is a belt that loops around and around and around. And as much as I walk forward, I am not going anywhere. But if I stop, the treadmill keeps going, and so I have to catch up. And for us at Christmas time, we are on a treadmill, I think, a lot of times. So many of us are caught on this, we need to keep going, we need to keep going. And it's not going at a whopping 1.5 miles per hour. We're usually going at a crazy pace like that guy in the video. And just kind of moving super fast and trying to keep up and trying to go, because we've got presents to buy, and we have to make sure that as we buy these presents, they're what people want. Because we don't want anybody to be upset. And, you know, then there's the whole, like, do we do the gift card cop-out thing? Does that mean we don't love them as much? I don't know. Okay, and then there's the whole, like, okay, well, what about that person? Will they be offended if I buy them that? You know, let's buy them a Bible. Maybe they need to read the Bible more. Maybe they need a Bible, but maybe they'd be offended if they get a Bible. You know, there's all that, like, the gifts, the whole crazy. Well, are kids going to be happy? Are they going to be disappointed? Are they going to like what they get on Christmas Day, and then the next time be like, oh, I didn't want that, or, oh, this is really cool, and then it's dumb, or they really want something that's not what they really want, because you know what they really want, but it's not what they want. But anyway, there's all that. Then you get into the Christmas party thing, right? I got to go to this thing. I go to that party. I got the church party. I got my prime group party. I've got my family party. Then I got my other family party. And that's not even talking about blended families where there's like divorced families and you have to get this parent and that parent and that stepdad and that kid. And then bring out here. Oh, then there's the kids, right? The kids have parties. We got to get them to their school parties and their sports parties and their other events and that other thing. And we go and go and go and go and go. And we're like, wow, I can't wait for Christmas to be over so I can relax. I can't wait for Jesus to be done being born so I can take a break. And I think we get on this treadmill and we go and we go and we go and we go. And I can't see what time it is. And we miss what's going on because we're caught up. And I will say that, you know, there's probably 25% of what we do at Christmas. I'm just random. It's a statistic. It's totally official. But there's probably like 25% of what we do at Christmas time we should be doing. 25%. Let's say 26.8. That sounds even more official. 26.8% should be what we're doing. We want to focus on Christmas. We want to spend time with family. And there's nothing wrong with buying presents. There's nothing wrong with going to parties. There's nothing wrong with celebrating and having a good time. But the problem becomes when we get stuck on the treadmill and we feel like we have to do all of these things. And we have to keep it going. We have to keep it going. And we kind of look like, oh, man, it's getting close to Christmas time. It's getting to be insane. And we kind of hope that Christmas is over and because we know that treadmill is waiting. We know it's waiting. And we have to get on it and go and go. And so I want to talk today about something. It's totally, totally different from what you would have expected to talk about in December in a church. But I want to look at a passage in the Old Testament. And we're going to look at a passage in Exodus. But before we do, here's what I want you to get. The point for this week is this. For Christmas this year, slow down. Slow down. It doesn't say stop. And I'm not saying that anything, these things are bad that you're doing. I mean, if you're involved in Christmas sin, then stop. I don't know what Christmas sin is. But stop. You know, don't be like, oh, it's time to go kill somebody again. It's Christmas. Like, don't do that. That's bad. So stop that. But there's a lot of good things we do that perhaps we need to stop doing so that we can slow down and get off the treadmill and remember what Christmas is all about. So, I want to look at a passage in Exodus chapter 16. And if you have your Bibles, you can open the paper to Exodus 16 YouVersion app, which many of you probably have at this point after last week's fifth Sunday with the Thanksgiving experience with your prime groups. But Exodus chapter 16. And as you're opening, I'll explain a little bit what's going on here. We've got the story, and well, actually, this Friday, Exodus Gods and Kings is coming into theaters. I was excited about Noah. Then I saw Noah. And I'm not one of those church haters being like, oh, it's not exactly like the word of the Lord. Like, I'll give some grace for the people trying to do something dramatic in Hollywood, which is a crazy hard culture to work in. No, it was bad. Like, sorry, it wasn't very at all anyway biblical. It's sort of like Noah and Lord of the Rings came together and had a evil, ugly child. But anyway, so Exodus, Gods and Kings is coming out, and it could be a really cool story, but it's the story of the Exodus. It could be awful, unbiblical, so don't be like, well, my pastor said I should see this. And then people can be hating on MC3 like they already do, and that's all right. We're okay with it. But it might not be good, it might be good. But regardless, it's the story of the Exodus. And many of you, if you grew up in church circles, church world, you know the story. And if you don't, you probably saw Charlton Heston, or you saw, was it Ralph Fiennes? Oh, Val Kilmer. Was it Val Kilmer that played Moses in Prince of Egypt? Anybody remember that one? It was a movie, Prince of Egypt, cartoon. There will be miracles if you believe. Remember that? Was that Beyonce or Whitney Houston or something? Okay, forget it. Anyway, it's the story that we're familiar with mostly. And it's the story of how the Israelites were in slavery for 400 years, and they were crying out in Egypt, crying out to God to be rescued. And God rescued them through some miraculous, amazing things. We call them the 10 plagues. Then they escaped from Egypt. They crossed the Red Sea miraculously. The waters parted. They walked through on dry ground to escape the Egyptians. And then the water came down on the Egyptians after them. And they were out in the desert, headed towards the Promised Land. And we pick up this story. It's about 45 days out, about a month and a half out from leaving Egypt. Now, month and a half, 45 days-ish, they just saw God perform some crazy, amazing miracles. They walked through a giant wall of water on each side through the Red Sea, and they're in the desert, and they start complaining. And they say, God, actually, they were complaining to Moses. Moses, you're our leader. Why did you and God take us out of here? We would have been better off in slavery in Egypt, because at least there our bellies were full. At least there we had all the meat that we could eat. And so, in Exodus 16, it starts with them complaining. And then God saying to Moses, look, I hear their complaining, I hear their grumbling, which is just a beautiful picture of grace. That's a whole another story to talk about. But he says, I hear their complaining. And he said, tell them that this evening, there's going to be more meat than you can eat. And then starting tomorrow morning, there'll be bread for you to eat as well. And so that's kind of what happens. Moses goes to the people and says, look, God heard you, you stinking whiners. And so he's going to help you. He's going to provide what you asked for. He said, tonight there's going to be quail, and then tomorrow morning there will be bread on the ground. And that's where we're picking up here in Exodus chapter 16, verse 13. It says, that evening, quail came and covered the camp. And in the morning, there was a layer of dew around the camp. When the dew was gone, thin flakes like frost on the ground appeared on the desert floor. When the Israelites saw it, they said to each other, what is it? For they did not know what it was. Moses said to them, it is the bread the Lord has given you to eat. This is what the Lord has commanded. Everyone is to gather as much as they need. Take an omer for each person that you have in your tent. The Israelites did as they were told. Some gathered much, some little. And when they measured it by the omer, the one who gathered much did not have too much, and the one who gathered little did not have too little. Everyone had gathered just as much as they needed. Then Moses said to them, no one is to keep any of it until morning. However, some of them paid no attention to Moses. They kept part of some of it till morning, but it was full of maggots and began to smell. So Moses was angry with them. Are we following? Good. Each morning, everyone gathered. Did I just say that? No, everyone gathered as much as they needed. And when the sun grew hot, it melted away. On the sixth day, they gathered twice as much. Two omers for each person. And the leaders of the community came and reported this to Moses. He said to them, this is what the Lord commanded. Tomorrow is to be a day of Sabbath rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. So bake what you want to bake and boil what you want to boil. Save whatever is left and keep it until morning. So they saved it until morning as Moses commanded. And it did not stink or get maggots in it. Eat it today, Moses said, because today is a Sabbath to the Lord. You will not find any of it on the ground today. 6 days you were to gather it, but on the seventh day, the Sabbath, there will not be any. Nevertheless, some of the people went out on the seventh day to gather it, but they found none. Then the Lord said to Moses, how long will you refuse to keep my commands and my instructions? Bear in mind the Lord has given you the Sabbath. That is why on the sixth day he gives you bread for 2 days. Everyone is to stay where they are on the seventh day. No one is to go out. So the people rested on the seventh day. The people of Israel called the bread manna. It was white like coriander seed and tasted like wafers made with honey. So, that's the story. And perhaps you've heard that story. You're familiar with the story. But I want to look at kind of what's going on here with this whole idea of God providing manna for the Israelite humanity. Funny play. Okay. All right. Anyway, what I want you to see in this story is a couple things. One, God provided manna. God provided the manna. And I'm going to have to step off my treadmill for a second and pick this up. But God provided the manna for the Israelites. And I want you to get that this wasn't something that they were doing for themselves. It wasn't something that they earned. It wasn't something they deserved because they were whining and complaining about it. But yet God still provided it for them. And that's what it says there in verse 13, 16. It says, that evening quail came and covered the camp. And in the morning there was a layer of dew on the ground. The dew was gone. There were thin flakes on the desert floor. They saw it. They said to each other, what is it? And the word, what is it, is man, is the Hebrew word. Where we get the word manach, and it actually means what. It doesn't mean what is it as much, it just means what. So that's probably they're like, what, what? Did you get some what? Yeah, I got some what. And they were asking, how much what do you have? And he said, oh, I have an omer, which is not to be confused with gomer. That was last month. And not to be confused with homer. He's don't, that's don't, not what. So don't is homer, what is omer. And so they had a what, an omer of what, and this is a quart. And 2 quarts equals an omer. So they had 2 quarts of what? And that's what they gathered every day. They would go out and gather that much per person in each tent. So everybody got to go and choose what they, however much they needed for their tent. And the cool thing was that going on to verse 17, it says the Israelites did as they were told. Some gathered much and some gathered little. So they're a big family in the tent. They gathered more. If there was less in the tent, they gathered less. And so when they measured it by the omer, the one who gathered much did not have too much, and the one who gathered little did not have too little. Everyone had gathered just as much as they needed. And I want you to see this, that God provided this what for them so that they could have it to eat. And the crazy thing is, no matter what they got, they all had enough. You know, so it was not just a miraculous showing up on the ground. Some kind of frost disappeared and it was like this stuff. But it was enough to fill them. And it said that everybody had everything they needed. They weren't lacking. They had exactly what they needed. And of course, then Moses says, you know, don't keep any of it until the morning. But some of them just, you know, ignored Moses. They paid no attention. They disobeyed him. And they kept it overnight. And the next morning, they woke up and it was smelly and it had maggots in it. It was some pretty nasty. What? I'm not going to be able to manage that all morning. But the point was that God provided this. And he said, look, I want you to go out every day and get this stuff. Every morning, they would get up and it would be there. Every day. They didn't miss a day. We'll get to the sixth day in a second. But they went out and it was there because God said, I'm providing this for you. And what we know from the story is they ended up wandering for 40 years in the wilderness. And for all 40 years, God provided what for them on the desert. And that was something that was miraculous. And so I want you to see that this was something that God provided. They didn't do anything to deserve it. They didn't earn it. They didn't go out and plant something to get it. It just came. God provided it for them in a miraculous way because he loves his people. Then I want you to understand that God prescribed rest. Pause for a wait. Okay. God prescribed rest. So he says, look, I want you to go out every day and grab some of this stuff. And it's going to provide everything you need. Don't get any more than you need. Just an omer per person. And an omer per person was enough. And it was miraculous stuff. I will say this. It said that the people could bake it. They could boil it. They could grind it. And it said later that it tasted like sweet honey wafers. So it was tasty stuff. And I don't know much about cooking. But from what I understand, this is pretty impressive that there's an object that you can do all of that with it. Like, I love bacon. Fried bacon is good. And we found out that you can put bacon in an oven and bake it. And oven-baked bacon is really good, too. It's a quicker way to do it without all the splatter, and it's tasty. What you can't do is boil bacon. Doesn't work. So don't try boiling bacon. But you know, so even something as wonderful and almost as amazing and miraculous as what is bacon, right? I mean, there's manna. And there's bacon, but you can't even boil bacon. But with this manna stuff, like, you could do everything with it. So it was a pretty impressive thing. And God said, look, you're going to get this every morning. Then in verse 21, he says, each morning everyone gathered as much as they needed. When the sun grew hot, it melted away. On the sixth day, they gathered twice as much. So they gathered two omers, or four of these, per person. And the leaders were like, whoa, Moses, hey, they went out, they got twice as much the second day. Moses was like, oh, it's all cool. It's good. I told them to do that. He says, because this is what the Lord commanded. Tomorrow, the seventh day, the Sabbath, the seventh day of the week, which in our calendar will be Saturday, not Sunday. The seventh day of the week, he says, is to be a day of rest, a holy Sabbath. The word means to take a break, to cease, to rest, to reflect, to end. And so he said that this day is going to be a day of reflection, a day of stopping, a day of just quit. So because of that, he says, I want you to get twice as much the day before. And so then he goes on and says, so bake what you want to bake, boil what you want to boil. And he said, now just realize, you might do this. And you know, last time you baked that bread, you left it sit overnight in the pantry, and the next morning it had maggots in it. It was kind of stinky. It wasn't something you'd prefer. He said, but trust me, this time I'm prescribing, I'm saying, I want you to rest on that seventh day. And so because I want you to rest on that seventh day, you're going to get twice as much on the sixth day, and it will be okay. So they saved it, and then they kept it till morning on verse 24, as Moses commanded, and it did not stink or get maggots in it. Eat it today, Moses said. Now we're on the seventh day, the Saturday. He said, because today is a Sabbath to the Lord. You won't find any on the ground today. 6 days you're to gather it, but on the seventh day, the Sabbath, there will not be any. Nevertheless, some of the people went out on the seventh day to gather it. but they found none. Slowing down. So, the point being that God said, look, I'm going to provide this miraculous stuff for you. I'm going to provide for your needs. I'm going to give you what you need. Now, I want you to take this stuff, which is miraculous and awesome, but when you do it, I want you to realize that there's a day that I'm setting aside for you to rest. I want you to take a break. I want you to stop doing your stuff, doing your doing, and just rest and reflect. And so I want you to get this. Well, this is what he wanted you to get, that God required trust in that statement. He says, I'm going to provide this manna, but I want you to rest the seventh day of the week. And therefore, it's going to require trust on behalf of the people. And so the people had to believe and say, okay, God, you said you're going to give this to me for 6 days. Every other day I've gone out to get it, and it's been there. And every day that I've kept it, it's been maggots and stinky and nasty. And now you're saying, keep it, because it'll be there the next day. And it required them to trust God. And so that is what verse 28 says. And the Lord said, well, people actually went out to get some on the seventh day, and it wasn't there. And the Lord said to Moses, how long will you refuse to keep my commandments and my instructions? Bear in mind that the Lord has given you the Sabbath. He says, look, Moses, your people, I told you, I provided this miraculous stuff. We just crossed the Red Sea. Now, I want you to trust me. I created the Sabbath. This is my idea. That's God. This is God's idea. And so I need your people, I need the Israelites to just trust me. Because I want you to rest, and because I want you to rest, even though it feels like you should be going out and working and getting your food, if you don't get your food, you're going to be hungry. He says, no, I'm asking you, I'm telling you, take a day of rest, and I will provide what you need. And so it required trust on behalf of the people. And God said, I want you to go out and rest. I want you to stay. And the word is to sit, to dwell. It doesn't mean going, okay, moving on. Like, it essentially means just sit on your butt. Take a break. Rest. And the word, again, means to reflect, to have some focus here. So that's kind of what was going on here with this story of God providing the manna for the people. He said, look, I'm going to provide this for you. I'm going to give you everything that you need. But I need you because I know you, because I created you, I'm building in a day of rest, the seventh day of the week. So on the sixth day, you need to get twice as much, and you're going to need to trust me that I'm going to provide everything you need for that extra day. Because rest is important, and I'm telling you to rest. I'm telling you to take a break. So trust that I'm going to come through for you. And of course, again, some of the people did it, other people didn't. And they missed that, like, hello, I said this is what's going to happen, and it did. So, what's really interesting is that at the right before this little account that we read there in verse 11, it says, the Lord said to Moses, I have heard the grumbling of the Israelites. This isn't on the screen. I have heard the grumbling of the Israelites. Tell them, at twilight you will eat meat, and in the morning you will be filled with bread. And I love what he says here. He says, then you will know that I am the Lord your God. And so all this was to demonstrate God's greatness. God said, look, I'm going to provide this thing in a miraculous way, and I'm going to tell you that you need to rest, to take a break, and I am going to make up the difference. I'm going to provide it. Just trust me, and it will come through. So, what does that have to do with Christmas? Because for Christmas this year, we need to slow down. That's the point. That's what I want you to understand. Now, we're on this treadmill. We're walking, we're running, and we think, I've got to keep going. Oh, I don't want anybody to be upset. What if that family member's mad? What if my kids cry? What if they throw a temper tantrum? What if they don't like me? What if my mom gets mad at me? My dad gets mad at my mom because of me? What if my friends are like, oh, you don't like me anymore because you didn't come to my party? Like, sometimes we need to get off and not fall over. We need to stop and take a break and understand that sometimes keeping going and doing and doing and doing and doing and going faster and more and more and more and more. See, here's the thing is the problem with that going and doing more and more is that it comes down to us. It's because you think, I think, that the reason I have everything or anything that I have is because of what I have done. And the truth is, everything that we have is because of what God has done. And so here's the deal. I want us to get off of the treadmill. I want us to rest. I want us to look at this sort of like the Israelites did, where they said, I've got to keep grabbing the manna. I've got to get the what off of the ground, because if I don't get the what, it's not going to be there on that every day. And God said, no, look, the seventh day I want you to rest. And I am going to fill in the gaps. I am going to provide what you need. Trust me. So, I need you to get this too. In the New Testament, Jesus comes on the scene. He actually, of all the Ten Commandments, the big Ten Commandments, Sabbath is the one that he doesn't say we should follow today. It's the one commandment out of the ten that he doesn't reiterate in some way or shape or form. Most of the times when Jesus talks about the Sabbath, he says, you know, actually it's not that way. So I want you to understand that what I'm saying today is not a commandment in terms of God says you need to keep the Sabbath holy, which would mean yesterday, on the day most of us do all of our work and projects, would be a day we're not supposed to do anything. That's not true for us. We're not Jewish people. We're not living under the law of the Old Testament. But there is a principle here, and that is understanding that rest is a good thing. That taking a break is a good thing. That slowing down is a good thing. So I want to talk about the rewards of rest. Because I know that there are some things. I think it's important for us to get off and realize that taking a break can actually be a good thing. That stopping this rush, that getting off of the treadmill can be a good thing. And I will say, it can be a good thing, but I know it's hard, because right now we're like, what am I going to do? You know, some of you probably aren't even here today, because you might have to go to a Christmas party this afternoon. You're like physically in the building, but you're thinking about that thing, and maybe there's a special deal that you have to get online. And I just want you to understand that taking a break is a good thing, and there are some rewards from it. The first thing I want you to see is that rest allows us to reflect. Rest allows us to reflect. God, when he created the Sabbath, when he set up this idea, and we'll see in a little bit, it wasn't just so that people would stop doing anything. He wasn't like, yeah, laziness, woohoo! That wasn't the point. The point of the Sabbath was because he wanted his people in the Old Testament to reflect on everything that God had done. And you and I know, and if you don't know this, you're lying to yourself, that when we get busy, we can't focus on other things. When we're so busy running and going, I mean, and I'm not talking about deep spiritual things, but how many things have you missed, you know, over the course of your life? You're like, oh, I totally forgot about that. I was running from here to there, and I totally missed that. Or you get caught up in something, and you miss, oh, that was that person's party that I was supposed to go to. Or, oh, I didn't pick him up from practice. I'm so sorry. I was busy doing this thing. And we miss things. And God knows that. God created us and said, look, I want you to rest because I want to give you some time just to reflect on my goodness, on how great and wonderful I am. And this is what he says in Deuteronomy chapter 5. The word Deuteronomy means second law, Deuteronomos, the people. This is 40 years after the story we were just reading. And Moses is reiterating, he's repeating the law the second time to the people. And as he's telling them this, he says in verse 15, he says, remember that you were once slaves in Egypt, but the Lord your God brought you out with his strong hand and powerful arm. That is why the Lord your God has commanded you to rest on the Sabbath day. He said, I want you to rest so that you can remember all that I have done, so that you can reflect on what matters most, so that you can reflect on what is important. And I say to you, MC3, we need to slow down at Christmas time so that we can remember what Christmas is all about. And I want to give you permission to do that. I want you to be like, well, your mother is not very happy with the way you responded to her Christmas invitation. And you can say, my pastor told me to do it. Sorry. I'll take it. Bring it. What? Anyway, but that's the point. Like, and I'm not saying this because I've got everything figured out. And all we do in our homes, we go home every afternoon and pray together as a family for the Lord to help us remember all that he has done for us. And then eventually it's midnight and the kids are saying, Father, I am weary. Can we cease praying so that we may sleep? And I say, yes, children, but tomorrow we shall wake up and pray and reflect on all that God is doing. No, we're like, this is crazy. We're doing stuff and things are crazy. And there's church stuff and there's home stuff and there's school stuff and there's work stuff. There's all this stuff and we miss it. This is an issue for me, too. I was not just looking at everybody else last year going, we need to talk about this Christmas time. These people got problems. I was back there going, we need to talk about this next Christmas time because I got problems. Because we get so caught up, we get so busy, and God says rest is important because it allows us the time to reflect. And honestly, our culture, we know it's consumer. I mean, come on, the video was at a random undisclosed location that you probably do not recognize in any way, shape, or form that had their Christmas stuff out in late August because it's commercial, it's big, it's money, it's culture. And those by themselves aren't necessarily bad things, but sometimes that often squeezes out what's really important. And we've talked before about how your family is important. But I will say this, your family isn't as important as God. Jesus is more important than your family. We've talked about, you know, giving is important. Yeah. We've talked about how giving is important. But you know what? God is more important than giving. So the idea of rest was it gave the people some time to reflect. He said, I want you to take this Sabbath so you can remember all that I have done for you. And I want to encourage you to slow down so that you can remember what God has done for you. So that you can reflect on what God has provided for you. I mean, have you taken the time to do that? Have you taken the time to say, wow, look at all that we have? But we're so busy, and we'll get into this in a couple more weeks here, but I mean, we always want more. We always want the next thing. We always want that present. But sometimes taking a break, slowing down, lets us reflect and say, wow, God, you've given me so much. I mean, I overheard a conversation between Kendra and one of our kids talking about, well, what do you want for Christmas? What do you need for Christmas? I don't think many of us have anything we need for Christmas. And they were like, oh, I don't know, I could use this or I could want that. And Kendra's like, well, that means you're rich. Because you can't think of anything that you need for Christmas. And I'd be willing to bet most of you in this room, there is nothing you need for Christmas. Because God has provided you with so much. There's nothing. None of you are naked. Awesome. Thank you. But God has provided that for you. So, one of the benefits of rest, the reward of rest, is it allows us to reflect on God. The second thing, and this is because God created us, he designed us, he made us, is that rest causes us to recharge. You can't keep going and going and going. You are not the Energizer Bunny. Sorry, I'm old. Old person reference. You can't. Your body needs rest. And if you don't give your body rest, it will take it from you. It's just natural. My dad might listen to this, so sorry, Dad. But my dad has now some dietary restrictions in his older age, and that's because he didn't take time to rest in his younger age. I'll just leave it at that. But it's true. I mean, we look at it and we're like, oh, man, okay. Now we have to change the way we cook some things for Christmas, but it's because we need to rest. Your body needs that time to recharge. You need sleep. You need to step off the treadmill. Yes, this is good for health and fitness, but so is this. And the cool thing about this is that when you're resting, not only are you recharging your body physically, and there's all sorts of stuff about endorphins and serotonin and Sarah McLachlan or something. But But you have time to reflect and think about things and reflect on God's goodness and reflect on how if you get up too fast, you're a little lightheaded. But rest allows us to recharge. And here's the deal, right? In Mark, and I said Jesus never reiterated the Sabbath. He never told people that were following him to you have to follow, obey this law, because God had fulfilled that, essentially. I won't get into all that. But here's the deal. In Mark chapter 2, the disciples were walking around, and it says one day, on Sabbath day, it's a Saturday, the seventh day of the week, the day of rest that the law required, as Jesus was walking through some grain fields. Now, Jesus is the Son of God. Jesus has some authority that you and I don't. Okay, just in case you thought you were the Son of God, you're not. Sorry. So he was walking through some grain fields. His disciples began breaking the heads of grain off to eat. Now, so you're imagining this, right? You're walking, and I don't know how many of you walk through grain fields. I don't know if I've ever seen a grain field in the area. But maybe you're walking through, and you're like, oh, there's an apple tree, and you grab an apple and start to eat it. Well, the Pharisees, the legalists, the rulers, the people that were all about the law and doing what was good on the outside but didn't care anything about the inside, they looked at that and said, look, why are they breaking the law by harvesting grain on the Sabbath? So you're walking through the field there and you're like, oh, there's an apple, and you grab it and someone says, how dare you harvest the apples? Like, I was just eating an apple. I wasn't harvesting. You know, have you ever watched those apple harvesters? They're pretty cool deals. They're like these big old machines that come up and I think that's apples. Maybe those are tree nuts. Anyway, it comes up, something like that. Harvest something. It goes, it has this big thing that wraps around it, and it goes, and then it shakes all the stuff down. Have you ever seen that stuff? It's really cool. But anyway, that's harvesting. That's just snacking, eating. And so the Pharisees were looking for a way. They're like, these guys were hungry. And so Jesus goes on and says, look, this isn't a big deal. And I skipped part of the passage there, but he says, you know, David did the same thing in the Old Testament. The priest fed him bread that was supposed to be set aside for God. And he says, but here's the deal. This is what Jesus said to them. The Sabbath was made to meet the needs of people and not people to meet the requirements of the Sabbath. So Jesus said, look, this day wasn't designed so there could be all these rules so that people could say, no swimming on the Sabbath, which the Sabbath is Saturday, not Sunday. This is the Lord's day. This is the Sabbath. No, the Sabbath is Saturday. Anyway, the whole point was, that there are all these things that we've built up over time. Jesus says, no, this isn't designed so you have some rule that you can follow. This was created for the sake of rest, for the sake of my people, for the sake of humanity who need to take a break because people need to recharge. And so that was the whole point. That's the only thing that when Jesus over and over said in the New Testament, when he talked about the Sabbath, it was him saying, no, this wasn't designed so that we can have these laws and rules. This is designed because people, human beings, need rest. And Jesus, fully God and fully human, he took time to rest. We need rest. We need to recharge. And I just say that because it's important. We think we have to do. We think we have to go. We think, well, it's the sixth day, but every other day I've had to get the manna, so I'm going to have to do it today too. And we think it's our effort. And God says, no. It's me providing for you. And I want you to rest. And I'm going to come through. And that leads us to the third thing, is that rest forces us to rely. Rest forces us to rely on God. Because it's easy, and you're deceived, I'm deceived, when we think that our efforts, our doing stuff, is getting things accomplished. Well, the reason I have food on my table is because I have a job, because I earned my job, because I went to school, and I did it so that I could have this job. And there's a human effort part there, and I'm not denying that. Everything that we have, you looked at this last week in your prime groups with the Thanksgiving experience. Every good and perfect gift is from God. And so we can't think that it's about our effort. It's because God is the one that's provided for us. And when we're going and doing, we sometimes still think in the back of our mind, it's because I'm doing it. It's because I'm earning it. It's because I've accomplished it. And when we take the time to rest, we factor that out of the equation. There was nothing that the Israelites could do on that seventh day that could say, well, the reason we have such a full cupboard and such yummy food to eat here is because I went out this morning and harvested it. No. It's because God provided, caused the thing that he provided to last for 2 days because he wanted you to rest. And it requires us, it forces us to rely on God. Here's a passage in Psalm chapter 40, the whole Psalm, Psalm 46. And I'm just going to read through it and then talk about it in a second. But Psalm 46 says, God is our refuge and strength, always ready to help in times of trouble. So we will not fear when earthquakes come and the mountains crumble into the sea. Let the oceans roar and foam. Let the mountains tremble and the waters surge. A river brings joy to the city of our God, the sacred home of the Most High. God dwells in that city. It cannot be destroyed. From the very break of the day, God will protect it. The nations are in chaos and their kingdoms crumble. God's voice thunders and the earth melts. The Lord Almighty is here among us. The God of Israel is our fortress. Come see the glorious works of the Lord. See how he brings destruction upon the Lord of the world. He causes wars to end throughout the earth. He breaks the bow and snaps the spear. He burns the shields with fire. Don't go any further. So what's going on here is that all this stuff is gone. They're like, oh, there's all these physical calamities. The earth, the mountains are crumbling. There's earthquakes. There's volcanoes, whatever. Things are going crazy. Tidal waves. I don't know what's going on. Just looking at the world and all this stuff. And then he's like, and then there's all these wars and these nations are coming. And basically the guy writing Psalms is saying, well, it looks like everything's coming. It's all going to fall apart. All these nations are coming on us and there's all these earthquakes. Everything is going crazy. What is going to happen? Oh, what are we going to do? How are we going to get through this problem? How are we going to solve this issue? How are we going to stop this nation's coming? They're going to attack us. What are we going to do? What's going on? And then, in verse 10, God says this. Be still and know that I am God! Exclamation point. Sorry, I had to add that at the end. And it doesn't mean necessarily just, the word here doesn't mean just to stop. Okay, God, now what? Like, it really means, it means rest, relax, trust, because I am God. And you think that that earthquake is going to cause some problems for you? It's like, I am the one that controls the earthquakes. You think that that nation is going to come and attack you and bring you down? I am the one that causes wars to start and causes wars to stop. I am in control. I will be honored by every nation. I will be honored throughout the world. The Lord Almighty is here among us. The God of Israel is our fortress. Listen, rest forces us to rely because God can say, be still, calm down, stop going on the treadmill. Because I'm God. And you need to rest. I created you. You need to stop and take a break. You need to reflect on what Christmas is all about. You need to reflect on how great God is and the fact that he sent his one and only son coming from God to flesh to live on this earth. Born in a much worse place than any of you were born, I guarantee it. Even if you were born in the backseat of your car, it still had cushioning. He was born in a feeding trough for animals. And yet we get caught up in doing and doing and doing and going and going and going and going. And we can't rest. Oh, God, I can't do that, God. I've got to worry about this thing. I've got to do it. And I just want you to know. I just want to say, be still. Just relax. And trust that God is in control because he is. And that's what he was saying to the Israelites. Look, take a break. I want you to take this seventh day off and know that I'm the one that's providing. And I know every other day, if you held extra, it was going to stink and be full of maggots. Maybe Bear Grylls was into that, but most people aren't. He said, just trust me because I am going to provide what you need. And I want to say that to us. At Christmas time, this Christmas, slow down. Trust that God is going to provide for you. So here's what I want to suggest to you. It's kind of a big suggestion. It's a bold suggestion. But this idea of slowing down, I want to encourage you, and we're not going to let you off the hook just walking out of here because your kids are hearing this now and your ATU pack brings it up as well. But I want to encourage you as a family with your immediate family, your kids, your spouse, your family, whatever, to give up one, now listen, give up one good thing or event or tradition this year. And I'm not saying give up, like, we're going to stop killing people, kids. You know, we're going to stop throwing rocks at the neighbor's windows. Pastor said to give up something. No, I mean something good. And that might be, you know what, there's a party that every year you've gone to, and this year you're going to politely decline. Maybe there's that thing like every year we always go out and buy the biggest Christmas tree on the lot on the day before Christmas. And I want to say, don't do that this year. Maybe it's ice skating that you do every Christmas Eve. Maybe it's how you do Christmas presents. And I want to encourage you. I'd like you to give it up. And I'm not saying by giving up it's because it's a bad thing. I'm saying give it up just to take a moment to slow down. And trust that God is going to fill in the gaps. Trust that through that time of reflection, through that time of rest. And I don't mean to say give it up and do something else. I'm saying give it up and don't do anything. Just to slow down. Just to rest and trust that God is going to fill in the gaps. That God is going to provide. And I don't want us to miss what Christmas is. I don't want us to miss Jesus coming in the flesh. But we're so busy going and going and going and going and going that we don't have time for that. That we don't have time to reflect. That we don't have time to rest. And of course, by going and going and going, we don't have to trust God. We got it all under control, right? So that's what I want you to do, is give up one good thing, one good event, one good tradition that you do, and just give it up this year. You can do it again next year, whatever. But just for the sake of resting, for the sake of slowing down. And I will say, we're kind of putting our money where our mouth is as a church. We are not doing the Sunday night before Christmas this year. The last few years, we've done that big event. It's kind of our first big event as a church 4 years ago. I think that was fourth. This will be the fourth year. And we did the Pyorama, and it was a lot of fun. It was a good thing, but we're not doing that. We're just going to rest. And I've already had some people like, oh, man, that was the one thing we could do because we were safe to go to your garage church of Satan as long as it wasn't on a Sunday. I'm just kidding. But kind of. But there were people disappointed, and I know it was hard. I'm like, yeah, I love having people. It's full. We packed the house out. But we're not doing that just because this principle is important. There's nothing wrong with it. We weren't not making enough money or not making enough pie or whatever. It's just so that we can rest. And I want to encourage you and your family to find a thing. And I don't mean just mandate it to your kids. Get your kids involved in this conversation. And say, here's why. Because there's something a little bit more important at stake here. So that's what I want you to do. For Christmas this year, slow down. Get off of the treadmill. Take a break. Rest. And give up something. And like I said, that theme is going to come back in your Pactivity this week with your prime groups. Your kids are hearing that right now in Ignition. So that's what I want to encourage you to do. Let's pray. Father, I thank you so much for the example in the Old Testament of the Israelites and how you, in a miraculous way, in a totally perfect way, provided food for them to eat every day. And they had all that they needed. They didn't have any more than they needed. They didn't have any less than they needed. Nobody walked away hungry. And yet, you told them to rest so that they could reflect on you, so that you could come through for them on that seventh day and provide what they need. And I pray for us in here, and I know we're busy. I know we have all these reasons why we can't give up something, why we have to stay on the treadmill. But God, I pray that you would help us, give us that extra energy, perseverance, whatever, to give up something and then watch you come through, watch you fill in the gaps and provide in a way that only you can, that you would give us the rest that we need, the recharging that we need, and help us to rely on you through it. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.